Hey, folks, welcome to the Redneck Country Podcast. We are ready to go. We got Bill on the phone. Bill, are you there?
Good evening, everybody.
And Scotty?
Hello.
And tonight, we are going not to the woods at all. We're going to the water. So we have with us Nick, and I'm not even going to pronounce his last name. I'm going to let him do it. Nick, what is your last name?
It's Obermock.
Obermock. Nicky O, that's what we're going with.
You were worried about messing up his last name when you messed up mine for however many podcasts in a row.
I know it, because whenever I talk about Nick, I say Obermock. So now it's Bill Tom. No, sorry, I said it right. Darn it, it's Bill
See,
Tom,
awesome.
And it's Nick Obermock. So we're going Bill T, Billy T, and Nicky O. Anyway, all right, folks. Sorry for the mini tangent. Nick is the owner of Pond Predator Fishing Charters, and so we brought him on because last year, Scotty's actually done it for a couple of years. Scott, you've gone on a charter with Nick a few times, right?
Yeah, I think like four or five now.
Like four or five. I only knew about like three. So I'm a little hurt. I'm just going to.
Yeah, you only invited one.
I knew about three. I only got invited to one. He gave it to me as a Christmas gift last year. And so I actually got to go. So that's how I met Nick. But Scotty, you've gone for a while with your mom and your dad and everything. So we've got Nick here because what is coming up? But pickerel season. Oh, wait, we have a debate.
Walleye.
So Bill, you say what?
It's pickerel.
It's Scotty, you say what?
Walleye.
And I am not even astute enough, educated enough. I'm a little ignorant to the whole deal. So I'm not even going to make an attempt to say what it is. Nick, you are the tiebreaker. What is it? Is it pickerel or is it walleye?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I called it a pickerel my entire life until I started guiding and got on social media. Once I got on social media, we pretty much called them walleye.
Walleye.
That's not a tiebreaker at all.
That's not even close.
That's not even a tiebreaker.
The pressures of social media got you.
It did. Well, you know, before social media, you know, I'm a Canadian. I always called it a pickerel. We called it pickerel our whole lives. You didn't communicate with that many Americans, but now that I'm on social media, it's like we run all these different groups and it's both American and Canadian, right? So now it's just straight up walleye. It's the proper name. It's the scientific name to call it. So we just go with walleye.
You're losing, Bill. Did you hear those words?
Bow to the podcast pressure.
Did you hear that? It's the scientific name. You're losing.
For the interests of our podcast audience, I will call them walleye for the evening.
Okay, I actually just Googled it, and believe it or not, the name
of a pickerel is a grass pike.
A yellow pike is what it's actually called. Yeah,
it's called a chain pickerel.
But the true
we can't agree on that.
Okay, but the true biologist name, according to Google, and I've been told that Google doesn't lie, is a Sander Vitrus. Sander Vitrus. The walleye.
Yeah, I'm sure pickerel is a lot better than that one. But we'll go with walleye for the sake of the podcast.
Yeah, I mean it's a freshwater persiform, so we're good.
Got it. Yeah.
I just read it on Google. Okay, we'll carry on. It's a pickerel and a walleye. You will know what you're talking about either which way. And for all you folks down in the United States, pickerel or walleye. And for all you folks up in Canada, walleye or pickerel. And we are carrying on. Okay, Nick. So you do pond predator charter fishing charters out of where?
We do walleye on the Detroit River. And then we switch over to Lake St. Clair. I usually do a week or two of walleye on Lake St. Clair. And then we switch right into muskie on Lake St. Clair.
Into muskie, yeah. And I've seen some, I've never caught a muskie, but I've seen some pics on your Facebook. You guys caught some freaking monsters.
Yeah, we had a great year last year for big fish. I got my new personal best muskie at 54 and a half, which is really fun because I'm usually guiding and I'm not usually fishing. And I was out with my dad and one of his buddies, and it was my turn on the rod and grabbed the rod and got my personal best, 54 and a half.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
54 and a half. That's taller than my kids. They could eat my kids. See, I ain't going swimming in Lake St. Clair. tell you that much. And now I'm even more nervous to go hunting in that darn little layout boat. What if one of them things thinks that's like I'm a little duck?
We got him attack our decoys.
No kidding, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah. I'd be on him. I'd be headlocking him. I'd look like Crocodile Dundee there taking down a muskie.
Well, I think I sent you that video of the muskie swimming with its head out of the water through my decoys while I was duck hunting.
Yes.
I showed you that video.
Yes, right? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, made me feel even more comfy to go sit in a layout boat. All right, so you do, what is the time of year? Because I know it's coming up. I know you've been making some posts on Facebook to book some dates and get her in locked in, but what is the, do you know the opening day this year?
Well, there's no opening day. My area, walleye is open all year round, so it's just a matter of the spawn and when they start moving into the river, which they kind of, sometimes they're a little bit early. Sometimes they start moving in around the last week of March, but we don't start our charters till April 1st. Once we know there's fish in the river and people are going to have a good time, yeah, start catching them. We usually go around April 1st. We start our season.
Okay. So now do you go out prior by yourself or with your buddies?
Oh, hell yeah, I do. Actually, last year, Todd, I went ice fishing on the canal and I caught a limit of perch, or not a limit, I think I caught like 25 keepers anyway. And then I went home and got my boat and the boat ramp was open and I went for walleye and that was my first one I caught of the year last year. I was hand lining for it, but I got my first one of the year. That was in March, the end of March.
So now when you're in that, when you said you're in the channel, is the channel catching perch? Is that where you said you were?
I was in a canal.
In the canal?
The marinas,
that's not
fishing,
fishing. Right by your house?
By my dad's house.
Oh, okay.
In LaSalle. Yeah.
Right on. So for those listening, Nick's got a pretty unique setup for his house. I mean, you come out his back door and there's his deck, goes right to the St. Clair, and he's got a hot tub right on the edge that he could actually, I'll let you finish. You sit in that and you sit in the hot tub, drink in one hand, fishing pole in the other.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
When you're that dedicated, you set up a hot tub right there on the St. Clair. It's pretty wicked.
I caught a 13-inch perch from my hot tub. It was awesome.
Did you take it, bring it in the hot tub with you?
I don't know if I ever seen the picture. I have a picture of me holding it. I had my toucan on. I got the fish in one beer in one hand and the fish on the other, standing in the hot tub.
I think we have our photo, folks, for the podcast. You have to send me that. You must send me that. That's awesome. All right. So the time of year. So April 1st, you start rocking and rolling. And then that's when your charter's open and you're ready to go. Can I ask? I've got to get all the technical crap out of the way first, and then we'll get right into the actual fishing side of it and the tips, the tricks, and how you're so successful. Because, folks, he is successful. But, okay, so what are the costs?
I charge $125 with tax a person, and our trips are 5 hours long. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I require a minimum of 3 people, and we could take up to 4 people. And then during the week, if someone wants to call in sick to work and give me a call, if I have the day open, I'll go out with just a single person. No problem.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I'm available.
Redneck Country does not condone calling in sick to work to go fishing.
Yeah, they do.
We are not responsible if you get fired.
No.
All right. So I only asked that so I know how much Scott spent on me for Christmas.
That's not nice.
sorry. Okay, awesome. So $125 weekends, you need 3 guys, can take 4. So now I will say that when Scotty said, I'm going, I don't like big water and I don't like boats. And so my idea of fishing, we rent a cottage, my family and my father, every summer, and we go up, but we go on, they call it a lake, but it's not huge. And I mean, it's not like there's waves. And so I go for largemouth and pike, and I have a blast, and I have a little 12-foot John boat with a motor on the back. Way we go, we're ready to rock. So when you say Lake Erie, Lake St. Clair, Detroit River, all these to me are big water. And I was nervous as heck when we were going. Almost as nervous as when I was going duck hunting with you, Nick, that I knew I had to get in that dinky little Leo boat. But I will say, folks, that that boat that he's got, it's a good size. You are comfortable. I was not worried. Once we got there and I got in that boat, I was like, oh my gosh, this is a cakewalk. I was having a good time. And I thought I'd be like white knuckle the whole time. So I will say that it's a good sized boat. Okay. So, yeah, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I had that boat custom built for the river. That's why it's 18 feet long and it's 7 feet wide and flat bottom. So it's made to be able to stand up and jig without much movement in the boat. That's why we jig out of that boat.
So is that the way you do most of your fishing? Todd might get to this a little bit later on.
No, you're good. Questions, that's right where we were going. I got all the technical or the factual stuff out of the way. Let's hit her. Go.
So I was listening. To the stories of how you're muskie fishing, and you know, typically they say muskie is the fish of 1,000 casts, but it sounds like you're not casting. Go ahead.
The myth of the muskie, it's the fish of 10,000 casts. Okay, or 15 hours of trolling for one bite for a hookup. That's the average in North America. Lake St. Clair, you know, we go out on an 8-hour day. You know, some days we don't get anything. I'm not going to lie. Some days you go, you don't catch a muskie. That's just muskie fishing. Then some days we go, we catch 25. Other days you go, you only catch 4. Other days you catch 12. Muskie fishing is muskie fishing. It's always going to be tough. It's always going to be challenging. And that's what makes it, for me personally, the most addictive thing that I do, because it's about that chase. I'm a meat hunter. We don't keep our muskie, but I'm a meat hunter, and I'm all about hooking that hearing that line rip when those big muskie hit. Like, that's just the greatest feeling ever.
And for Pecoro, you're
digging. That is so awesome.
you're not trolling much, but you're doing a finding some structure. And how are you fishing for them?
We're jigging the channel banks. So in the Detroit River, the main channel is dredged out for the big freighters to go up and down. And as the walleye are coming off Lake Erie, they're coming into the river to spawn, and they feed on those channel banks. You can go from, you know, 30 feet of water to 15 feet of water, pretty much, you know, within 7 feet, you know what I mean? So they're pretty steep banks. And the walleye tend to hang out on the edge of those banks, and early in the morning and then right before dark and after dark, they come up on the bank in shallow water. So that's how we're trying to find them, like that. But most of the time they're on the edge of the banks, different areas of the river.
There's no slot size on down your way, is there?
No slot size, but our fish tend to be different size every year. So what determines our size is the hatch on Lake Erie. So like 2014, 2015, we had a record hatch. They haven't had a hatch that good since, I think it was 1970 something. And so, you know, for after that, like 2015, 2016, 2017, you know, we're getting a lot of, you know, anywhere from 12 to 16, 17 inches. And last year, they're a lot nicer. We're getting, you know, we're seeing an average of probably like 21 inches. And now I'm really excited. I think this is going to be my personal best fishing on the river my whole life, because I've been watching the guys that are fishing on Lake St. Clair right now. They're like breaking the marinas with ice when they freeze up to get out with their boats. And they're still fishing those schools of fish. And they are catching on average 23 to 25 inches.
Like right
and
now?
They're just... Yeah, right now. Guys been fishing since December for him.
No kidding.
And and it's on the American side of the Lake St. Clair. Like, they're fishing on the American side. There's a sand bottom flat over there, and they school up there every year. I used to fish over there, but I've been kind of busy. I do the walleye and the muskie in the fall now, and between duck hunting and everything else, I don't really have time to go over there. But those are the class fish, though. Those are our fish that we're gonna be fishing in the spring. And they're catching toads, like they're big bellies. You know, once a walleye hits that, once he hits that 20, 23, 24 inch mark, you know, they really fill out on top of their length. You know what I mean? So it's going to be a great season. This is a phenomenal season. It used to be like that back in the 90s when I first started, when my dad was taking me out, you know, we had a lot of big fish. Like, you average size was 25, 26 inches. there's always big one. And, you know, now we're getting back to that state. And then last year in 2018, Lake Erie had the record hatch of all time, or I guess that'd be almost 2 years ago now.
How do they manage that? How do they know that?
Surveys, Environment Canada, DNR, they do surveys. They put nets down and they take estimates. They look at the hatch and they can estimate how many frying or fry are in the lake.
Yep, right on. Man, okay. So do you see musky populations boom up when pickerel populations boom up?
No, not really. I mean, I think the musky are definitely feeding on the walleye, but the musky, they're more of a coarse fish, so they like to eat like gizzard shad, sheephead, suckers. They love suckers, so they like fat fish, you know, fatty fish, because a musky wants to burn the least amount of energy and get the most gain, you know. So yeah, don't get me wrong, there's musky eating walleye, like, for sure, but musky,
it doesn't affect their population too much. Yeah, okay.
I don't think it does. No, musky populations go up and down. They've always gone up and down. We had a die off about 4 years ago. We lost a lot of fish, and you know, we're starting to see them come back pretty strong already. You know, once some of them die off, other ones get strong. And every time there's ever been a die off, the lake has seen a new record, and the record was beat again after that die off. And a guide from the States got one. It was 57.25 inches.
Holy smokes.
Which I was fishing in the same area as him, and I was trolling the same area as him. My baits probably went over that fish. I was pretty upset about that. I didn't catch that fish that day. But that same day, which was funny, that same day he caught that fish, I caught four fish over 50 inches that morning.
I've
never done that before. That's the only time I've ever done that in my life. 4 over 50 in one trip. And I was just with friends that day too. It was pretty phenomenal.
That's awesome. You'll never match another day like that. 4 over 50 in one morning. That's amazing.
That was fun. But my best day musky fishing, I was fishing with my good buddy Ben.
Benny Wilton.
And Ben Wilton, yep. And we went out for musky with his little boy, who I believe was 7 at the time. And we went 27 for 29 in 3.5 hours. We were running 6 rods. And every time we hit our waypoint, we get a double header. And it was getting kind of choppy. So we're trying to drive the boat and reel in the muskie and net them all at the same time between this, the two of us. I was trying to get the little boy to out drive the boat. And I was like, "You're Caleb, drive the boat." He's like grabbing the wheel. Vroom, 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 vroom. It was pure chaos, and it was awesome.
It was pure chaos, and it was awesome. And now that just because I'm sitting here going, it was choppy. What? That's all I took away from that. But that boat you use for muskie, it's a monster, right?
Yeah. She's almost 30 feet long, and she's got a 10-foot beam on her. Really high freeboard. It's a big boat.
Yeah, I don't know what any of that means. I just know I've seen it, and it's a giant.
All that means is Todd feels comfortable. When
yeah, the boat. Yeah, it was. It's big that enough translates that I think I could go out in the canal in it. Okay, so you mentioned you had 6 rods in. Are you allowed? Obviously, 3 of you. You're allowed more than one pole per person.
On the river, you're allowed 1 rod per person on the Canadian side, and then when we're musky fishing, you're allowed 2 rods per angler.
2 rods per angler. So that's why they got all those big rod holders mounted up above on top of the boat.
Yeah, when I got a full group, when I'm musky fishing, and I got 5 clients plus myself, and if I have a first mate, you know, we're usually running 13 rods.
13 rods.
And you got holders for all 13, or do people hold them themselves?
No, I got rod holders in the boat for trolling. We
like 13.
So we run planer boards. Yeah, we run. So what we do is we run planer boards, big planer boards, and we run them about 125. Okay,
hold on. What's a planer board? I'm so sorry. I'm such a.
So there's two different kinds of planer boards. There's an inline planer board, and what a planer board does, it brings your line. You attach it to your fishing line, and it pulls your line away from the boat. So if you want to fish out from the boat, you put on a planer board. If you want to put a dipsy diver on, it brings you down. where a downrigger brings you down. A planer board is designed to bring your line away from the boat, out from the boat. So big planer boards with a mounted system like I have on my big boat, we have a planer board mast and we have reels. And so you put the planer board in the water, and the ones I'm talking about, they're about, I'd say, about 3.5 feet long and 20 inches tall.
Like pieces of
wood.
And
they're designed to cut. Yeah, it's wood. And they're designed to cut to tow away. So when you put them in the water, they're angled. So when you put them in the water, it wants to pull away from the boat. So what they do is we let them out about 150 feet, and they pull off to each side of the boat. And then you have a line now that's going from the top of your boat all the way down to the planer board. So now I'm going to let my rod out. So I let my lure back, you know, 50, 100 feet, whatever I'm running. I let that back. I close my bail, and I have a clip. I attach it's a release clip, just like on a downrigger. I attach the release onto my fishing line, just like you would. And then the other part goes onto my main part of the planer board line.
And
the main
line.
And then when I open my, And when I open my bail, the line will slide all the way down to the end. And I'm able to run, I usually run 4 to 5 rods on each planer board. And I run the rest of the rods off the boat. We call them down rods. So we'll run prop wash rod. We run lures right next to the boat, like right behind the engine.
Right. And then how far wide do these planer boards take it outside the boat?
I'm running them up to 150, 200 feet, depending on how far I put the planer board out and how rough it is. But yeah,
you can set the pitch of a planer board to go further wide or, you know, deeper, not necessarily deeper too much, but the sole purpose of a planer board is so that if you're running multiple rods, you can get them away to the side so that you're not having tangled lines. I don't know how you do it with 13, but when you're running four, you know, you can run two at the back of the boat and then planer board to the left side, planer board to the right. And that's all I'm comfortable with, but I'm not a guy that does this every
with
day.
13. So like, I'm thinking like 13 out there. You'd look like one of them deep sea fishing vessels coming at you. There can't be a boat come close to you. You'd be like, hey, get away. I got lines in there, bros. Yeah. Go.
When you're trolling for a muskie or if you're trolling for walleye, you can run a lot more planer board. You can run more lines off each planer board because a walleye or a muskie never, not very often, runs to the side. So when a muskie bites the lure, he usually hits the bait going really fast. Like they'll burst hit it. Like I think they can swim up to like 47 mile an hour. And when they hit it, they'll run back. So once he pulls the release on, you're trolling forward. The muskie is now running back. And so the way you have it set up is when he hits that line, he can't tangle the other line. Now I'm not saying we've never had some tangles. I've had epic tangles, but you know, in theory, that's how it's supposed to work every time.
You've not fished with my wife and kids or Scott.
Hey, and when we're in Lake Erie, we run planer boards on our line. So we have little plastic planer boards that we put on each line and run them out.
That's the ones I used.
Yeah, those are called inline planer boards.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just little, and you can run as many as you need, really. But yeah, that's what we run right now.
See, I'm learning so much. Still don't want to get in a boat, but I'm learning so much. Right on. So you'd mostly do that for muskie, because on pickerel, you're jigging for the most part.
Yeah, we're for the river, I'm jigging most days, and we also do a little bit of hand lining.
Oh, and I want to talk about that, yeah, because that's pretty unique. We did that when we went out, right? And I thought that was pretty wild. I was a little nervous at first, and Nick. So just so the folks know, we went jigging for the most part of the charter and hit a few spots. We went down. We went right out from his place. We weren't that far. And Scott, I believe you caught a couple right there in the. Yep. And I don't know. I call it the channel, but we weren't that far offshore. So I was comfy, everybody. I could see land. But so then we went around this island. We went down. And then all of a sudden, it was just nonstop boats. Like you could walk across from one side to the other on boats. It was insane. And so Nick says to us, as we're rolling up, okay, guys, watch for nets coming down. Because that's where they're going to be catching the fish. That's where we're going. And Nick is
the
literally.
Bed rod theory.
Say that again, Bill. Sorry.
The bent rod theory.
Yeah, well, yeah, and everybody's digging, right?
So that's where you go.
Yeah, he's like, watch for nets to come down. Because every one of these boats has got their nets, you know, stuck in a rod holder, so it's sticking straight up in there. He's like, watch for nets being used. And he's guiding us through these boats. Like, we can high-five the guys as we're going by them. And nobody's looking at us because they're all watching their jigs, man. Like, it was some serious jazz. And so finally we got to a spot, and I'm thinking, there's no way we're going to catch pickerel. There's 1,500 boats out. Like, I'm not kidding you when I say you could walk across from boat to boat to boat. And so Nick got us up to a spot. He's like, okay, if all those people are around here, this is where we need to be, and we are going to drift. And he and you can clarify this after, Nick, on how you do it if you want. I'm going to give the Todd what I witnessed. So we're jigging straight up and down vertical, and Nick is matching the current that we're drifting. No anchor. We're drifting all just inside all of these boats. And he was matching that current in some way, shape, or form so that we could keep our jig line straight up and down. And we started catching fish. And other guys everywhere were not catching fish, and I was actually really impressed by that. But Nick, you could talk about that a little bit more if you want on how that happens, because I look back at the time, I was just too busy concentrating on trying to jig up and down. Yeah. And I know Scott's mom was with us, and she was too. She was right beside me, and I'm watching her, and she's watching me, and we're doing it. Meanwhile, Scott's on the other side nailing fish like it's nothing. And so, but you were. I realized after I'm like, Nick was on the motor that whole time and kept us going in the right direction, but
and
kept
fishing.
Us from, and fishing at the same time, one hand on a rod, one hand on the motor. We didn't bounce off anybody. We didn't get punched out. And we rolled right through where we needed to be because we were catching fish. So yeah, I was impressed.
Well, the trick to that is I'm actually not matching the current. You're actually going with the current, but you're counteracting the wind. So if you had absolutely zero wind, and when I say zero wind, I mean 0 mile an hour. There's no other physics things that can push your boat, like boat wake or anything. The boat is just going to stay in one spot. There's no wake, no nothing, no wind. You wouldn't have to touch that motor. It never happens, okay? Never.
I've never seen it happen ever. I got enough wind for everybody.
Yeah. So like, there's always yeah, boat traffic on the Detroit River. Like, so there's always waves pushing you or wind or... So you're constantly counteracting that motion. So the trick is the walleye are on the bottom. They're laying on the bottom. And you want your jig to be vertical because when you're jigging it up and you're letting it down nice and slow and you're waiting to feel the bottom again, you're lowering it and raising it in front of their face, and you're not pulling it sideways away from their face. So when you're lowering it, it's lowering down to them and they can see it coming and they're going to bite it. But if your line is on an angle, you know, the jig is going on an angle, right? And you're jigging it away sideways. So it's not as effective. And it means the difference between sometimes not catching anything and catching like 60 fish. I've had days where I've had four guys in the boat all smash out a limit in 2 hours. And I had one guy, you know, not catch a single fish, not even a bite. And it's usually because they have too much line out and they're not even bouncing on the bottom. They're just dragging their line.
I have no problem saying that was me that day. But I have a different theory because my father's done research and all this, and he actually makes a concoction that when we go trout fishing that we put on our hands. I won't say what the concoction is, but we put on our hands because he has researched. He loves trout fishing in the streams, and I call it trout hunting. But he's made this concoction that we put on our hands because he has researched and read so many magazine articles and studies and stuff that fish have can smell better than they can see, is his theory. And so we got to mask our scent. And what they found was fish are more attracted to estrogen than they are testosterone. So I just assumed Scotty was catching so many fish.
From all and the time,
I wasn't because of the estrogen.
Through you.
Yeah. I was wondering where you were going for with that. That was a long way to go, but it was worth it.
But it's all true. Dad does have this concoction, doesn't he, Scotty? He makes us rub our hands on it before we put the worm on our hook when we go trail hunting. Yep. Yeah, he used to sell it. And we do. We'll limit Oaten Browns on that stream pretty good. I can't say it's all Dad's concoction, but the stream's pretty decent too and well hidden. But yeah,
there's something to be said for the drift speed though. Nick is right. I mean, when I used to fish on Niagara River for smallmouth bass, I'd run a drift sock. I couldn't afford the fancy trolling motor with all the keep you in the right position type stuff. But if the fish weren't biting, I definitely would throw out that drift sock, would slow me right down. And it was just me to present that bait in front of that fish just a little bit longer. And it made the difference between going home empty handed and with something in the live well.
How did you?
Oh, for sure.
How did you fish them, Bill? Like you fish bass that way?
Yeah, I used to run a salted tube jig with a tip with a leech, or even just a salted tube jig with a quarter or 3/8 ounce weight on.
Slip weight on the top, yeah, like a bullet nose.
No, just a tube weight, tube jig, and then toss them out on rock shoals. And but the trick was to keep the bait presented long enough that it was effective, or you we drop shot a lot on either Lake Erie or the Niagara River, depending on where we're fishing at the time.
What is a drift sock?
Drift sock would be, how do I explain it? So it's
a sea anchor.
Yeah, it's a parachute shape almost, but more conical. It'd have a big hole in the one end and a smaller hole on the back side of it.
Just to slow you down, like a parachute.
That's it. Yeah, that's what it is. It's a big parachute that allows you to continue to flow, so you're not having to put an anchor out, but it will slow you right down. Some guys will run two. Some guys run big socks, smaller ones. I got a 16-foot aluminum fishing boat, so I don't need a massive drift sock to keep me going, slowing down. But yeah, Nick, you ever run those?
I used to run them in my big musky boat when I used to troll for walleye on Lake St. Clair. But I trolled with them, so I'd throw them off each side of the boat because I had a big 350 inboard engine, and I couldn't get my boat slower than 3 mile an hour. So I put two big drift socks off the big boat and troll with them, and it would slow my boat down to 1.7 mile an hour for trolling for walleye out of the big boat.
Oh, yes, they work.
Oh yeah, they work. It creates that resistance around, and that's what slows you down. It's a lot of, you just got to remember to pull them in when you go to take off.
Right on. But look at that. I'm learning so much. See, I fish, but I've always either fished offshore, or like I said, gone up north to the little lakes and fished little boats and little water. And I'm happy with that. This is this is a whole new deal for me. I'm learning so much.
So on the river, Scott, on the river, when we're fishing the river for walleye, you want to keep it straight up and down. You want to match the current speed.
Yeah.
Because especially earlier in the year, because the fish are slow and sluggish because the water's still cold. But so you want to keep that bait as close to their face as possible. But come June, of which, you know, not very many people fish the river in June, July, but the fishing's just as good, like if not better. In June, we use what's called it's just like Lake Erie. They use bottom bouncers, but we use a 2 ounce and even a 3 ounce bottom bouncer. And you can't just drift with the current. A lot of guys just put their line down and drift with the current, and they see their blade moving. Yeah, the blade's going to move, but it's not moving fast enough. So what we do on the river, on the Detroit River with the current, is I troll with the current. I'll go 1.3 mile an hour faster than the current to make my blade spin as if I was going 2.2 mile an hour. You understand?
That's a whole lot of, I'm sitting here like that foghorn leghorn little chicken guy trying to do my math, keep up.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun because, like I said, a lot of guys don't do it anymore. Or you know, everyone fishes the river early and then they kind of go do the lake and everything. Lake Erie gets hot and everyone goes to Lake Erie and stuff. But it's kind of cool, man. Like when you're going a mile and a half faster down current, faster than the current, you're whipping. Like you guys know how fast we're going when we're jigging, how fast you get down the river. Imagine going another mile and a half on top of that, just cruising down the river with your rod, right? It's a lot of fun.
So one more, and where I was going after we talked about the boats that you could walk across. So then we did that for a while, and then Nick's got these wheels mounted up on his boat. Now, to when I've gotten in a boat that have these things, it's almost like where the sorry, the rowing oars would go. But he's got these wheels, and he throws a glove at me, and he says, "Hey, Todd, put this on." And it's like it wasn't a chainmail glove, was it, Nick? It was just like a work glove.
No, it's just like white cotton glove.
Yeah, And so he says, "Here you go." And he's got steel braided line or some kind. I'll let you can, again, you could correct all of my my falsehoods when I'm done. But so he puts a lure on, and he says, "Here you go, take this," and then just with a giant bell weight on the bottom or whatever it is, and he says, "Let it go till you feel it hit the ground, and then as we go, just pull it and let it drop. Pull it and let it drop. And every time you feel that, just touch the bottom, yank it back up with your hand." And so here I am sitting at the back of the boat, holding on to this line with this glove on, with the lure down below, and I'm just letting it bounce off that weight, bounce off the bottom and pull it up. And so you catch fish this way by hand. So then after you, when you hook one, you've got to hand reel it in, correct?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you could tell that now you could go the technical and correct me on everything. Because to me,
okay.
I've never heard of this before. I didn't even know what those wheels were until we started doing it. And I'm like, we're seriously fishing like this. This is insanity. Like, they made fishing reels how many years ago? Why am I using my hands? But to be honest, it would be pretty cool to hook into a fish and have to pull that sucker in with your hands. Oh, and he did say, don't wrap the line around your hands. I figured that was common sense, but I'm glad he did tell me that.
Yeah. So we call it hand lining, and the reel is called a hand. It's a hand called a hand line, obviously. And it's got a spring. It's got a retractable wheel inside the hand line, and it's on a spring. So when we put our line on, we turn that wheel as much as we can. Then we put our line on it. So that way, when you pull the line out and you go to, you give the wheel slack, it pulls it back in. So it's always going to suck up. Pull in your slack line. It's not strong enough to bring in your weight, but it'll always pull the slack. So the reason why it's so effective is, well, for one, guys have been doing it since like the 1930s. I
was going to ask that. Is this a common thing? Because I have never heard of it. I didn't even know people did this.
Yeah. Oh, it's common. There's more and more people getting into it. Every year, if you fish early April, they have the Michigan Walleye Tour and the Pro Walleye Tour. They come through the Detroit River every year. And I've talked to a bunch of those guys, and they're more and more of them are running hand lines now, because they're fishing early season and they're trying to catch big fish.
In the tournament, they're using hand lines.
Yep, they're allowed to use it. It's the most effective way to catch big fish on the Detroit River by far.
No doubt, eh?
Yeah. Because what you're doing is, so when you're letting that, you let your line out, you let your leader out. We run two lures on one line. So we have two leaders out. One's longer than the other. And when you go down to the bottom, you let your sinker down to the bottom. Now if the bottom didn't change depth, let's say it was 27 feet, there was no banks, no nothing. You could hold that sinker, hit the bottom and not have to lift your hand. Okay. When you're lifting your hand, it's not so much for the presentation. It's to keep on the bottom, because the bottom on the Detroit River changes so much. So, and like I said before, you're fishing bank. So you're going up the bank, down the bank, from 30 feet of water to 12 feet of water. So you're constantly letting line out or pulling line in. And that's why you need that spring that's always taking that slack line in and out. So the benefit is, the reason why everyone's running these hand lines in these tournaments is, when you're jigging, you're floating down the river, downstream at like 1.5 to 2 mile an hour, depending on where you're at in the river, in the current. When you're hand lining, you're going against the current. So now you have a big rappel, a big crankbait. It's sitting 6 inches off the bottom,
right
where it needs
face.
To be,
yep.
Right in their face, and you're going slow up the river, really slow up the river. So if you have a big old lazy walleye, because walleye are the laziest fish out there, if you have a big old lazy walleye and he's laying right on the bar, she's laying right on the bottom, when you're jigging, every time you bounce that jig, you're probably bouncing that jig every 5 feet on the bottom. Boom. 5 feet later. Boom. 5 feet later. Boom. Well, like I said, when you're hand lining, you're going against the current, and now you're covering all the bottom. That lure is just rattling in front of all their faces, going right by their face, nice and slow. And those big fish are lazy, and they will bite the back hook of that big lure. But they won't chase a jig sometimes, and that's how you get those monsters. I've caught all my biggest fish hand lining.
on that river.
No, so look at that, folks. If you go pond predator fishing charters, ask to go hand lining.
And another thing about hand lining, the biggest benefit to having a hand line on your boat on the Fish of Detroit River is that if that water gets a little bit dirty, if that river gets a little bit stained in color from weather, then they have a hard time seeing the jig because the jig is going over top of their heads, right? And it's got to pretty much land right on their lip in order for them to bite it. And then that's if they bite it. But they don't see it if it's 6 inches away or 7 inches away from them or a foot. So when you're hand lining, you can actually hand line effectively, if not even better than when you're in clean water. Because, that, like I said before, that lure is staying right in front of their face the
suspended
whole time.
Same just thing. Off the bottom, and it's rattling like a mad.
Yeah, right by them. It. They can't miss it. Like they feel it, right? It goes, and they see it. It goes right by them. And same thing for fishing after dark. I do a lot of hand lining after dark, and it's the same thing. All those big fish move into the banks, the shallow water. I'll, like when we're jigging, you see it. We're jigging deep, like anywhere from, you know, 15 to 35 feet of water to 45 feet of water. When I'm hand lining after dark, I'm fishing 6 feet. 7 feet of water. You know, those big monster walleye go from the deep water up into those shallow areas, and that they're going in there to feed and spawn.
So just a side note for all you ladies out there, hand lining after dark is actually Nick's Tinder name.
Yeah. My favorite thing to do. It's out of everything that I do in my life, like hand lining for fishing, hand lining after dark is my favorite. There's no better feeling.
Hand lining after dark. I'm gonna laugh every time I hear that. No, I'm sorry. Just
I'm gonna change my Tinder name to that now that you said it.
Hand lining after dark. Oh wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Right on. Right on. Yeah, well, I can tell you, I can attest that I absolutely had a blast when I went out, and I can't say that let me prelude all this. This is the most humbling podcast for me because normally I sound cocky and arrogant. Yeah, I shot that deer. I shot that turkey. But I don't know. I don't believe I have ever caught a pickerel and that or a walleye. And no, I think I have caught a walleye, but that's why Scott gave that to me. And he says, we're going to take you out. I said, you take me in that boat. Nobody's catching pickerel. I took my wife when we were dating still, my brother-in-law, his uncle has this cottage up north and it is supposed to be, this lake is loaded with walleye. You can't do nothing but catch walleye. So me and my now wife, but at the time she was my girlfriend, and my brother-in-law and my sister, away we went. And so we 6 hours up north, we get to this cottage. And so we got there on the Friday night, Saturday, we're out there. We're fishing away and they're slamming. We're just trolling really slow and they're slamming walleye, not monsters, but they're slamming walleye left, right, and center. And I'm catching these stupid little gar pike the whole weekend. And it was actually that funny story. I'm going on a tangent. Sorry, you knew you couldn't get a podcast without a tangent. I apologize, Bill.
So, it's just the way it is. I've come to accept it.
It's just the way it is. So as we're fishing away, and so I decide, screw this. I'm catching bass and I'm catching gar pike. I've had enough. I'm not even trolling anymore. You guys troll. We're going so slow and we're close enough to the shore. I threw on this little minnow, and I was just going largemouth after largemouth up onto the shore and nailing them left, right, and center. And I'm having a blast. So I take this, and it was one of these minnows that has the belly of it is opened. And so you use like a tube hook and you put the minnow over it. No weight, but so it's like an offset hook. And then it's inside the minnow body. So there's four of us in this, I don't even know, 14 foot aluminum, if it was 14 feet. And again, we're way up north, little 9.9. But I whip back and I want to cast as far as I can. Well, I launch one and I actually, no word of a lie, it was a cartoon. I took the hat off my brother-in-law's head with that lure. And so we had to go over and get his hat out of the water. So we start again. So I'm casting away and I wanted to reach over again and I two-hand my pole and my wife, at the time, my girlfriend, and I had a plan that only my brother-in-law knew, because I knew my sister, and if she listens to this, she's going to shoot me. But I knew my sister could not keep this a secret. And so I told my brother-in-law, I had gone and bought a ring just before we left. I'm going to propose to Jen. up on this trip up north. And so to me, it was genius. You're proposed at a cottage. Now, every time we go to a cottage, it's reminiscent of when we propose. So she's going to always want to go to a cottage. So anybody listening, that's tip number one. But so,
or really doesn't want to go anymore.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah, when you hear this story. So I two-hand this pole, and I've not proposed yet. And again, my sister does not know, but I two-hand this rod, and I let her rock, and I hear my wife go, "Aah!" and she screams. I lodge that hook in her head, and thank, thank goodness for she had like a ponytail in, because the hair was then fairly tight, but it still went in. And so we get the pliers and we got it out, and oh my gosh, I'm lucky I didn't go overboard. You just, it, Scott, you're gonna test, you don't mess with my wife.
No.
But I don't know. I looked at Rick. It goes me in the front, then my now wife, Jen, my sister, and then my brother-in-law at the back running the motor. And so I looked back at him and I just nodded with my eyes wide, like, it's time. So he's like, you know, I think we should go back for some lunch. And so we wheel back and get off. And my sister's like, okay, let's go. No, you stay with me. And so me and Jen get off. And he starts backing away, and then he's in trouble now, because so my wife's not, my girlfriend at the time, not even talking to me, because I just put a hook in her head after I whipped off my brother-in-law's hat. Like, did I not learn? You're an idiot, Todd. So as we're walking up, my sister, my brother-in-law's pulling away with the boat. My sister's screaming, I don't want to fish anymore. I'm hungry too. We need to go for lunch. And he just wheeled her away. So I went up, I proposed to my wife. And after that, ladies and gentlemen, men, take note, I could do no wrong. After that, she was elated. I almost flipped her off of a four-wheeler going up this steep hill where my brother-in-law was walking up beside. He had to grab the front of it to hold it down. I wasn't in trouble. We were good to go. So that saved my bacon proposing. But the whole point of this story, I never caught a walleye. And I swear to this day, and maybe when my dad, I remember going with my dad down in the Thames when they were running, catching, but I don't remember ever catching a walleye, and my dad doesn't remember either. Now, I've since found a picture when we went to a cottage with my father-in-law and mother-in-law up north that I'm holding a walleye. I don't remember catching it. It might have been Jen's. So to this day, I don't think I've still caught a walleye, because even that day with you, Nick, no, I was having more fun and chirping and joking and everything anyway than I was fishing. But I still don't think I've caught a stinking walleye or a pickerel.
I love fishing with you guys, especially Scott, because whenever Scott comes on the boat, he always goes right to the bow. So it's probably
right? So I gotta be careful. Nick will never invite me again, but it's like Nick at one and Scott on the other. That's the offset. But boat's on plane.
Scott goes about and he grabs the rod and he's got his line down there like before everyone else.
Everybody.
The whole time we're fishing, Scott has this permanent half grin, half smile look on his face, and I've never seen anybody so focused. So focused when I'm fishing my boat, and Scott's got it down. Scott knows what he's doing. Like, he can catch him. It's so awesome.
That's too funny.
Don't mess with Scott's pickerel. Walleye.
Hey, we did good. The very first year we went, we caught 70 fish in 2 days. It was insane.
That is pretty
crazy. That's a lot of fish.
So, Scott, you've taken on this charter, you've taken me, your Uncle Chuck, your mom, and your dad.
Yep. I've actually taken my mom one day and my dad the next, because my parents are divorced. So I've actually taken them one day apart.
Yeah.
Man.
So it's just crazy.
That's how we end up. Mom's always fun too. She's good. She's hilarious.
She is. She just doesn't care. She doesn't care if she catches them or not. She just likes being in the boat.
She tries. Todd, she focuses, man, and she asks questions and she's all about it. That's why I like fishing with her. She's all about it. Like, you know, some people go and they're like, just kind of give up or whatever. But his mom is like, Nick, am I on the bottom? What do you think? And and I'm trying to help her, and she's all about it, man. She doesn't give up. The time she starts, the time the trip's done, man. It's awesome. And I got Scott in front of that grin on his face, just smashing him. She's like, Scott, am I doing it right? He's like, ask Nick. Oh, I got one.
Leave me alone. I'm catching fish.
I'm busy.
That's awesome. Well, and I will say, so they own a couple boats, Scott's mom and stepdad, and it's because of his mom. Dennis, his stepdad, does not fish.
No, he hates fishing.
He hates fishing.
He drives the boat, but he will not get a fishing license.
He just hates fishing.
It's a waste of money and time. Although, driving the boat's okay.
I was going to say, he's there every weekend, and he's driving the boat, but it's a waste of time.
And I got to tell you, though, on the family fishing week, or weekend, whatever it is, that guy will fish you.
When he actually puts the pole in his hand? You know what? I'm gonna tell him. I'm gonna be an arm's length away because I know he'd take a swing. But it's because of estrogen.
Yeah, you better be an arm's length away.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Bill, we've never talked about this. Have you done a whole lot of pickerel fishing, walleye fishing? What kind of fishing do you do?
Truth, not a ton. We've done a bit of trolling for pickerel walleye. We've done a little bit of jigging. I had a real good experience when I was up at Ear Falls, which is way north. You just couldn't do any wrong. Every time you put the lure in the water, it would be a fish on of size. It wasn't even fishing. It was just, you know, shooting fish in a barrel, basically. That's how easy it was. But the more fishing I do is bass fishing, and I really, really get a kick out of that.
See, so, you're up in that right area. See, you live where I go to rent a cottage to fish. Well, we go a couple hours past that, but you're the start of those lakes that I like, right?
Yeah.
And they're jam-packed with bass and pike, and it's just throwing lures, it's drop shot, and it's I love it.
Yeah, I was just listening to you talk about boats. You know, you can walk across, there's so many of them, and I just envision ice fishing on Lake Simcoe. You know, when you got the ice huts that are so close that you can hear people cheering in the hut beside you that they've caught whatever they've caught, and it's typically perch fishing where we go for ice fishing on Simcoe, but. Yeah, it's amazing how many people do it, right?
When it's prime season, especially early season, when, like I said, when no one's really fishing the lake yet, and you go out there on a Saturday, the first really nice day in April, okay, like the first nice warm Saturday in April, you will see boats as far as you can see up the river and like within 10 feet of each other all the way down.
Man. Used to call that rafting.
You're looking for Craig Morgan. You know a music video is about to kick off.
Yeah. but like what Todd was saying before, though, if there's that many boats and you go there and you put your line down and you're looking around all those boats, if you don't see nets in the water, I won't stay there for 5 minutes. I'm gone. I'm gonna move to a different spot. When there's that many boats, it actually scares the fish because a lot of the guys, they go too fast. So when, you know, you drift down the river and then you got to go back up to make your drift again. Well, you know, you don't want to go full throttle through, you know, shallow water, even 20 feet of water, 18 feet of water. You got 900 boats going 60 mile an hour through all the other boats. You know, that's a lot of noise down there and it scares the fish. So a lot of times what I'll do is if I see a bunch of boats not catching anything like that, I'll go deep out from them. I'll go to the deeper water. I'll be the only guy out in the deeper water. You know, and then I'll start pounding them, but then I try not to use my net because I don't want them to see me.
They're, all of a sudden, there's 50 boats around you.
Within 10 minutes, you have guys all over you, but then you got to move again. That's in the river, though. You got to use the other boats to your advantage.
Right on. It's like not, putting out the coyote decoy. What's that, sir?
Fishing all them walleye is awesome, but every now and again, you actually get very lucky and hook into a sturgeon. I've seen a video of you guys hooking into a sturgeon, a young kid hooking into a sturgeon. I think, was it last year?
That was last year.
So happy, eh?
Insane. It was awesome. That was an epic day because this little boy, I think he was 12, he was just so thrilled to be out there fishing, and he had a million questions, and I love it, man. There is nothing better when I got a little kid, a group of them, there's a little kid, and they're into it. They're asking questions. They're trying. You know, I tell them to try this, and they listen to me, and they, boom, like, little kids, I love it because they listen. Little kids listen. Adults don't always listen. But little kids, they follow instructions. They follow instructions. And there's no better feeling than I'm with some kid and his dad, and the dad's not listening to me, and me and the little kid just start crushing them. You know what I mean? Just crushing them. When a little boy outfishes his dad 10 to 1, he's doing something right. You know what I mean? But that little guy, man, we had that sturgeon on. That's actually really, there's a cool story behind that fish. That we had that sturgeon on, and I said to the family right away, I said, you know, we might have this trip. We only had 3 hours left in the trip. We had a few walleye, but I was like, listen, you know, if we try and fight the sturgeon, you know, we've only got till 3 o'clock or whatever, and then we got to go in, and sometimes we might not see the sturgeon at all because we're only running six pound test line, 6 pound braid, and right. Medium light rods. So if you hook into a 75, 80 pound sturgeon, and if he doesn't want to come up, he ain't coming up. Like you can't force him. But if you're lucky and if you keep the boat over top of him, you drive the boat with the fish, stay over top of him, keep the line straight up and down so it doesn't break. And if you keep constant pressure on him, you got to horse him as much as you can before without breaking that line. There's a fine line. You have to horse him hard. You have to horse him, but
yep.
You're about to break the line. Like that's the only way you get him up. And then, and sometimes if you're lucky, they come up and you get a glimpse of him. And other times they come up right next to the boat and you can grab onto their tail and, you know, get a good picture of them in the water. You can't take them out of the water, but it's fun, man. That little guy, man, he was shaking like a little leaf.
Absolutely. I remember that video. It was insane.
How much would one of them weigh? That one that boy reeled in, how much did it weigh?
What would you pounds, 65 pounds. That one. I caught my biggest one last year by accident, again, fishing for walleye, and it was 6 feet long. I got him next to the boat. Unfortunately, I didn't get the, I got a picture. I got a video of him, but the person I was fishing with, she put the phone down cause I was looking for pliers. I was trying to get the hook out as fast as I could. And, she couldn't find the pliers and the sturgeon went crazy, like right next to the boat and there's no holding on to that. And the hook popped off and he swam away. But that one was about, that one had to be about 85 pounds. I'd say 90 pounds. It was big.
My gosh.
That was a nice fish. That's awesome.
There's monsters down there, but you know, you're not allowed to target them. And so if you're allowed to target them and I went down there with a 150 pound test, you know, and a heavy rod, I mean, it'd be a blast. You know what I mean? Like I hooked onto that. I couldn't even bump off the bottom. I couldn't even lift an inch off the bottom after 2 hours. you know what I mean? I'm like, that's a monster.
Absolutely.
You know, that fish has got to be 7 feet long, right? Like he's huge.
I caught a fish. I have no idea what it was, but in Lake Erie last year, I hooked into a fish that I could not get off the bottom. And I thought, oh, I'm doing okay. So I reel up a little bit, like a foot. And then it takes the rod under the boat. And I'm like, oh, man, that sucks. And then I get it up another foot. Well, actually, when it took off, it snapped my line like it was nothing. I had
just
no
sturgeon,
clue.
Man.
Yeah, no clue what it was.
Sturgeon. When a sturgeon, see, when we hook it in the river, when you hook onto one, they don't really move that much because, like I said, we only got 6 pound tests. We're actually not putting that much force on the fish for him to go crazy. You know what I mean? But when one knows it's hooked, like if you watch those guys fish for him in BC and, you know, or if you hook a small one and he feels the hook and you're actually muscling, pulling on a little bit and he knows what's going on, they go ape shit. Like they'll tail dance, they flip out of the water. If they want to run, they're going to run. You know what I mean? That sounds like you had a big sturgeon on.
Oh, it was awesome. It was fun. It didn't last long, but it was fun.
all I can think about is old man in the sea.
Not far off. I started fishing that river when I was probably 13 years old. My grandpa bought me a boat motor, and I had a little 10-foot aluminum boat, tiny little thing with a 9.9 on it. And I remember catching like a 5.5 foot sturgeon that boat. And When you're 13 years old and you catch a fish that's half the size of your boat, it's pretty thrilling.
Yeah,
you know, it's just amazing.
Yeah,
that would be wicked. I agree. I've only ever really fished trout, and we do, like I said, we hunt trout one day a year, family trip down to the secret stream that we've always hunted trout on. And then I like to do the bass thing, but it's mostly from shore, or if I go up north, then when we rent the cottage. But Bill, you wanted to go in one more direction before we wrap this up.
Yeah, just quick. I know that we've got a wealth of talent on here for another.
I know exactly where you're going to go. So before you say that, yeah, I wanted to say, Nick, what is your day job aside from being a guide?
I work for the Canadian Coast Guard full time.
As
I'm a chef.
Boom. Okay, Bill, go ahead.
All right. I appreciate it. So as I was saying, we had a wealth of knowledge on the podcast for things, one of which is the ability to cook what you catch. You got top recipe for cooking pickerel.
Yeah, man, it's really simple. It's simple and it's by far the best way. I got a couple different things, but for small walleye, for like a set, like, you know, anything under 23 inches are the ones I like to eat.
I don't even like to catch them. They're too little.
What I like to do is I like to fillet them. I like to skin them, take the skin right off. And I take the fillet and I dry, make sure it's nice and dry. And I salt and pepper the fillet and I dip it in egg, just pure egg. And then they go straight into flour. And in the flour, I have a lot of garlic powder. Like you could use garlic salt, but if you want to cut back on the salt, just to put a lot of garlic powder. And man, from there, right into hot oil. And it's nice and soft. It's flaky. It's not like a thick batter. It's delicious. And it's nice and light, and it's really good. That's my favorite way to cook walleye. And then if you catch a bigger one and you get the thicker pieces, what I like to do is it's called zipping. I cut the mud line out of them, the middle mud line.
Yep.
And I cut them in the cubes, like 2-inch cubes. And what I do is I take I cut the cube open a little bit and I stuff a little bit of cream cheese and jalapeno pepper in it. And I wrap it in bacon, the cube in bacon, and I sprinkle Cajun seasoning all over them and dose them with a little bit of garlic butter. And I bake them in the oven like that. And you do that for a party and you'll be everybody's best friend. You'll change your Tinder name to Walleye Master.
Hot pickle cubes.
That sounds really good. I wanted to touch on that. I've got all kinds of questions for you. I mean, we're kind of at our limit for this one, but I've got all kinds of questions for you on the cooking side of it. And we do well. I mean, I cheat. I do the fish crisp, and it seems to work. But hearing from a chef how he does it, he or she does it, is always willing to try something new. That's for sure.
Oh, I bet I bug Nick once a week. Every time it's my turn to cook, I'm like, hey, Nick, how am I cooking this? It's always good.
I didn't know we had him ready and available. Maybe I will too.
Hey, don't steal my time. Can you tell me, Nick, I hear, but I've never had, about pickle cheeks? Somebody told me they're the best eaten you can have of any fish is the cheeks of a pickerel.
They're delicious. They're delicious. You know, when you catch those little bigger ones, you know, you can take the cheeks out of those and skin them. It kind of tastes like a scallop, I guess, would be the closest thing, like a freshwater scallop. It's like you could taste like the pickerel or the walleye, but it's textured like a scallop, and they are to die for. But not only do you get that meat off the cheek,
but the butterfly underneath the fin.
Butterfly underneath, we call it wings.
Yeah,
and the wing. You cut the wing out, the two fins right underneath, closest to its gills, and you cut around that, and there's a big old piece of meat attached to that. You cut that out, and you leave the fins on and everything, and you batter those, and you deep fry those, and man, it's like sucking on a scallop. You just suck the meat right off the bone on it, and that's the same thing. It's the same meat as a cheek. It's delicious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I've never had that before.
Oh, it sounds really weird, and to be honest with you, I've been fishing walleye my entire life, and I've only been eating the wings for a couple of years now, and man, I don't know what I was missing. I was missing a lot before.
Same with me, actually, true enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
But when you're fishing Detroit River, we get all our big fish early. So if somebody wants to go and it's their goal to catch one over 10 pounds or over 8 pounds, like my biggest is 13 on the Detroit River. But if you want to try and catch one over 30 inches, the best time of the year to go is like early April. That's when the big, big spawners are coming through. You might not go out and catch a 5-man or 4-man limit in, you know, an hour or anything. Sometimes we limit out sometimes. Sometimes you don't limit out. But your goal early season is catch monsters, like a wall mounter.
I'm there.
And then if you want to catch eaters.
I'm there. You sold me.
If you want to catch eaters, though, you know, like the best time is like May. You know, like early May, all of May. The later the season goes, the smaller the fish get and the more that come in. So, like, you can go out and it's not uncommon to catch I've had a couple of days last year, we caught 120. You know, we're not keeping them, just catching and release, throwing them back. But we caught 120 in a trip, 5 hours.
Holy crap.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Right on.
Part of that interferes with turkey season for us.
I was thinking we go opening day at trout, and then we're right into turkeys.
Into turkeys. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't do much turkey hunting. That's because I'm always walleye fishing.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. Right on. Well, I think that was I've got so many more questions for you, Nick. I know Bill does. I know Scotty's hung with you enough that his questions are probably answered, but for the period. But we're definitely, if you'll be back on, we're definitely want to have you back on and pick your braid some more. Plus, you and I got some waterfowling stories to share as well that we'll have to get that rolling. But I hope this was a great episode. I enjoyed it. I learned so much, man. But folks, honestly, if you want to get yourselves into some serious pickle, you heard the numbers, Pond Predator Fishing Charters up there. Yeah.
Converted. Awesome.
But absolutely. Contact Nick. Nick, how do you say your last name?
Overmark.
Ladies, check him out on Tinder as a hand lining at night. And I hope everybody enjoyed this podcast. We will talk to you again next week.
Thanks, guys. It was fun.
That was an absolute blast.
Thank you. Okay, that'll do it for today. So until next time, on behalf of Redneck Country Podcast, I'm Bill Tom.
I'm Todd Millard. And Scott Goodall.
Nope, I'm good.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to be part of the podcast, by all means, hit us up at podcast@theredneckcountry.com. Again, that's podcast@theredneckcountry.com. And be part of it. Join us and have a blast. I hope you enjoyed it. Sitting around the campfire having some fun.